Good afternoon, and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. My name is Jen. I'm a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center, and our topic for the Good News Update this evening is the Time to Feel Good email class, which was first offered in November of last year and extended into December and January. And what happened with the class, it was around the recording and listening practice, and so many people were reporting life-transforming happenings with the class that it began to be all that we were ever talking about in practice. So if you came on retreat or listened to the radio show or participated in an at-home working meditation day, everyone was talking about the recording and listening practice. And so we got a flood of emails, people asking if they could opt in. So Sherry is actually offering the class again in April. So this evening I'm joined by a woman who's a longtime member of the Northern California Sangha, who's going to talk with us about her experience of the email class. Welcome, Renee.
Hello.
Hey.
Thank you.
So, Renee, before we jump in, I do have to say that you are also the creator of the fabulous, very popular practice bracelets.
Right, yep.
Available on Sangha Market. Maybe
yep.
Just a couple sentences on those.
Yeah, they're available on Sangha Market, and you can ask for custom sayings. Just go to any of them and send me an email through it, you know, as if you're ordering it, and send me what you want on the bracelet,
yeah. And
I'll make it for you. And, yeah, it's been a great process. I love making them, and all the money either goes to Living Compassion or back into beads to make the bracelets.
Yeah, and they're awesome practice reminders. I know Sherry always carries around a number of them that say horse pucky on them. So.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, horse pucky is a good one. I've gotten a few of those ordered and a lot of other ones. Let me think, freedom and
joy.
Nothing's coming to me right now.
Believe nothing. That's one
yeah,
of my
believe
favorites.
Nothing. Yeah. I did a couple that had RLing on them.
Good. Great.
You know, all the bunch, anything that you wanted to say that will help you remember.
Yeah. Which takes us to our topic tonight of the email class around recording and listening. So without kind of giving away the particular content of the class, since we wouldn't want to give it away for folks who are going to join the April class, I wonder if you could say a little bit just about how an email class works in general, because there are probably people listening who have never done one.
What is an email class? Well, an email class is when you get a couple of assignments per week, usually, or one a week, and Sherry, and I think sometimes the monks send out an assignment, and you do that assignment, and then you report back in 50 words or less to Sherry, or the guide, and then she responds with everyone's responses and her responses included, and then you can read those. And so it's a Sangha experience of, you know, seeing what everyone else is saying from the assignment and then her responses included.
Yeah. I confess that she pretty much solely takes it on, which is fairly extraordinary.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it is extraordinary.
It really, really is. And one of the things that makes it manageable is years ago it used to be that people could just write in whatever they, you know, wrote in, and some people would write in pages and pages, and now there's a 50-word limit. So you look at the assignment, you look to see, you know, what's your experience of that, and then you write it in very succinct form. I know for me, there were a number of times where I took my response from 150 down to 100 words, down to 75 words, down to, okay, what really, really counts, and got it down to the
definitely.
50 words, and that's an important piece of it.
Yeah, I can remember when that first happened, and I was a little disappointed that I couldn't just write everything I wanted. But now I feel it's sort of a relief to just be able to write the 50, and it gets me really to the meat of what I'm trying to talk about and, you know, the heart of what I want to say. And I find it helpful because then I can read more of the responses, too, of the Sangha members.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's my experience as well, that it really does become the Sangha experience because instead of sort of, wow, when am I ever going to get to that? It's,
exactly.
Just take in 15 minutes, I can get through a lot of the responses that were sent out that day.
Yeah, and I find that really joyful because it's sort of like you have this long list of all these amazing, you know, insights and things that conditioning saying to people that say to me the same thing to me, you know, it's I love reading them. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it reinforces, well, we're all in this together, we're all the same, and that it, I know for me, someone will write something in that I think, God, that really hits home, and I never would have phrased it that way. I never would have thought of that. That's really helpful.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what would you say, Renee, was so powerful about this particular email class for you?
Well, I think the content of it was particularly powerful because of the recording and listening itself being so powerful. I think people were having transforming experiences in their lives, and and you could read about those. And sort of like when I would get down a bit, I would read, and it would pick me back up to do it again. You know, so I would be doing it, and then I'd get away from it a little, and then I would go, I'm going to read some of these, and I'd read them, and I'd be like, wow, these people are really having some amazing experiences. And then I'd go start doing it, and then I'd have my own amazing experience.
Yeah.
So it was,
Yeah, go ahead.
The recording and listening, I think itself is just, it brings such heightened awareness to your life and your conditioned patterns, and the mentor is available all the time. And that's what's been so incredible to me is just remembering that. And even this morning on the way to work, I was something was happening to me with conditioning, and I was thinking, gosh, I wish I could talk to someone about this. You know, I've even forgotten, you know, that I have the recorder. And then I go, oh, wait a minute. I have the recorder. And every morning I go on to a spot and I record and listen before I come to work. And I was on my way to record and listen, and I still forgot that I had that available. And then I went, oh, I'm going to be doing this right in a minute. Like, in just a minute, I'm going to be doing this. And I did it, and it was awesome.
Yeah, that's such a great description of how conditioning gets us, just complete blinders.
Exactly.
To the most obvious thing. And as you say that, it occurs to me that is why this practice is so powerful, the recording and listening practice, because, I mean, it's not as if the information that we're getting through this is new, in the sense that, you know, we've always been practicing awareness. We're practicing Buddhism. The message we're getting over and over is nothing needs to change. We have everything within us that we need in order to make a difference in our own lives. But we constantly forget that information because, of course, conditioning is on a full-on campaign to cover that information over. And it sounds like what you're saying, and it's definitely my experience as well, that the recording and listening practice gives us direct access to that experience internally and really reinforces for us, I do have that within me. I do, in a sense, know what I need. I do have that information. Do I forget? Oh, yeah, all the time. And that's why we record it and listen back to it and get reminded.
Yeah, I would say that for sure, everything you just said, for sure. And I think the other thing, I continually am a little bit astonished at the level of detail that you can achieve with it. So, and on my own, the Sangha is just as important. I'm not implying that. I'm just saying that I can record it and then I'm noticing something really subtle about a subpersonality or about my reaction to someone or anything. And I see things about myself more frequently and more clearly than I did before on a daily minute-by-minute basis.
It's like it's training us to bring our entire lives into practice, to realize that practice is not just a hobby I have on the side, but my whole life can be lived from that foundation.
Oh, yes. And you say that, and that's my life-transforming experiences. I've been able to bring it into my work, and which is transforming my whole work life. I'm not suffering here every day. And then into my family, and you know, it's transformational in that respect for sure for me. Yeah.
Hey, speaking of your family, before we run out of time, I hear rumor that your son has gotten in on the action.
Yeah. Justin, my youngest son, and my oldest son is doing it too. But Justin, in particular, you know, his conditioned voices are probably about 500 times louder than the rest of us, and. He's constantly, you know, having a hard time, and he's young, and so he records those and listens to them and records reassurances for himself, and I record on there reassurances for him, and, you know, he picks it up on his own at this point. It's in his room, and he picks it up, and I think he's you know, calmer and seeing some differences for himself. I mean, he's in the moment. It's just he's learning what is like. So I talked to him about the stories, and you know, and he talks about the stories now. Well, I have the story going on, you know, and that's completely different language than, you know, believing the story. So
I have goosebumps
good.
All over.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and,
you know,
it's
fun for
cool.
us because we remember Justin from coming to the monastery when he was wee little for the kids
mm-hmm,
retreat,
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
so it's so fun to hear that he's
yeah.
doing that.
Yeah, definitely. He's and you know getting a lot of benefit from it, and I am too. I have the opportunity to tell him things that I might otherwise forget to say of how wonderful he is and things like that. So yeah.
Mm. Oh,
that's
so
awesome.
Thanks for sharing that piece. Yeah.
Yeah.
So before we end, two things I want to make sure people know about the upcoming class. They can go on the website to register for it. And I believe there's a discount for monthly donors. So if you're a monthly donor, you get a discount on the class. And that there's a special retreat that was actually created just for graduates of the class. So people who graduated from the one in November are invited to a retreat this spring, and I'm pretty sure we're planning to continue that tradition. So people who take the April class will be invited to another retreat that follows up on this work. And, you know, to me, I think the big reason is that just exactly what we were just talking about is that it's such a way to deepen and to bring our lives into practice that to offer people a retreat in particular to kind of really solidify that foundation, if you will, is so important. So there's that, and that I understand there's going to be sort of two tracks for the April class. So it's not just for people who have never done the class. It's also for the people who did the November class. And I'm sure, Renee, you can agree with me on this, that I imagine everyone who did that November class will be signing up for the April class because the number one thing is the support and the remembering. I mean, that's the way to carry it forward.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm looking forward to it. And, I, you know, everything is always fresh. So even if you did it in November, I think, you know, like I think each time in our whatever time we're at in our lives, there's something new that comes up. And and then the support of all the Sangha, you know, I've been missing it a bit. So it'll be
Me
nice
too.
To have that for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, as I say, I believe there are going to be added elements for people who are graduates of the first class. They'll have kind of extra things in the second class. So really highly encourage everyone to jump in and join the fun. And Renee, thank you so much for being our guest this evening. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
You're welcome. Thank you for asking.
You're most welcome. And Michael, we turn it over to you. Have a great show.
Great. Thank you, Jen. Thank you, Renee.
Thank you.
Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air. It's my pleasure to be joined tonight by Dave McKay, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Welcome, Dave.
Hey, Michael.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Great. That
Can
was
I tell
a high-energy conversation.
It sure was, yeah. I'll tell you what was coming up for me as a result of that. You know, what I was looking at is that, you know, we've been saying for years, and it's true, that what the Buddha taught is that we have everything inside that we're looking for.
Yeah.
And just hearing those two talk about the recording and listening practice, I just saw what a kind of like a breakthrough in our practice this recording and listening has been recently, because it's like it takes that which is within us, you know, the jewel that we're looking for, and it brings it to the surface in a way we can really access it.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes. Yes, it's great.
Mm-hmm.
Great. It sounds like what you're pointing at is that the wisdom we're looking for is here within us, and when I'm identified with conditioning, I'm looking for something out there that's going to somehow satisfy that and somehow make me enough and make me okay.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what we all want, I think, is you know, we want to be loved and accepted and cared for, and we want to live with somebody who really likes us and wants us to succeed and is really rooting for us as we go through the day and go through our lives. And you know, we all know that egocentric karmic conditioning is the opposite of all that.
Yes.
It's trying to destroy our lives all the time. It's throwing things in the way. It's punishing us. It's telling us we're bad, wrong people, even though we're not bad, wrong people and all that kind of stuff. And with the recording and listening practice, you get to talk. It's just like what Renee was talking about. You know, here's this thing going on. Oh, well, here's an opportunity. You know, I really wish I had somebody to talk to. Well, I do. I've got this unconditional love and acceptance living right here inside of me. And the recording is like it lifts it out of, you know, in my, for me, you know, my interior space and puts it someplace where I can practice it and I can really experience how much it's there. You know, I know a lot of people have said that, you know, one of the most powerful things about the whole recording listening is it's just the discovery that that wisdom and clarity and compassion and kindness is there, because you got this thing going on. You push your record button. Here's what's going on, and here's what conditioning is doing to me. And then you switch roles. You become the mentor, and then what you need is right there, coming out of your own mouth onto the recorder.
That's great.
It's really quite phenomenal. And like Jen said too, it's not any different from anything we've ever done. It's just that it's just the next frontier, really, and it's a really powerful way to access what we're looking for, instead of, you know, because a lot of times without that we just keep on running into conditioning over and over again.
Yes. Feels like it's amplifying what we've been doing all along.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I'll just throw my weight in behind the email class, and I just really hope people will take advantage of it. And it's like, I don't know if it'll be the same in this next class, but in the last class there was, Sherry was in there responding to everything everybody said, and it was really what everybody wrote in as a result of the class. And that level of guidance that's available is really a remarkable opportunity.
Yes. And the volume. I mean, she was responding to every single submission.
I know. It's like, boy, does she ever sleep?
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's really quite amazing. So, anyway.
Great.
Good stuff. Exciting times, too. We were just talking about that here, actually. It's exciting times. Exciting times in our practice. There's a lot going on.
There is a lot going on. And I'm about to tell you some of it right now.
All right.
Okay. Sherry will be at Open Circle in Berkeley on Sunday, March 20th at 7 p.m. And as we've been talking about, that new email class begins on April 1st, and you can register on the website. Sherry will be at Malaprop's Bookstore in Asheville, North Carolina on May 8th at 5 p.m. And then she'll be in Rhinebeck, New York for a weekend workshop May 27th to 30th. That's at the Omega Institute, and you register through Omega. And then in June, back in California, Sherry will be at the Esalen Institute in Big Sur for Spirituality and Business with Mark Lesser, who will be co-leading that workshop with her. That's June 10th through 12th. And then Sherry will be returning to Namaste in Felton, and that's July 8th and 9th, and that supports the Africa Vulnerable Children Project by participating in that. And then a week later in July, Sherry will be leading Not What But How at the Zen Monastery Peace Center, July 16th to 23rd. And then back to Esalen in August, August 12th to 14th. That's a weekend workshop Friday through Sunday. Workshop with Sharon.
Wow, that's quite a list.
It's quite a list. I notice it's getting longer each week.
Yeah, well, you know, people often say that spiritual practice gives a person a lot of energy, because, you know, it's a practice of aligning you with life and life in force and all that. And if you ever had any doubt about that, just look over that list, and I think that would be over. It's amazing what Sherry can accomplish. And then you think about the email class happening in the middle of all that, just amazing.
And what's also amazing is that we have a lot of wonderful callers here.
All right, good.
Okay. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Holly calling from Australia.
Hey, Holly.
Hi. It's amazing to hear the voices. I mean, you guys' voices again.
yeah.
In my head.
Likewise. What's going
on?
Yeah.
Well, at this very moment, I feel a bit emotional because just my heart's beating very fast just to actually hear what's going on over there.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I'm not crying with sadness. It's just I felt quite good actually when I dialed the numbers, but it's just overwhelming feeling of, I guess there's love in there,
mm-hmm.
and there's grace, and there's, it's something that's just been so important to me for these few years. I don't see myself coming back this year because I just can't afford it, but that's okay. It also is, like I go into fantasies of doing retreats and stuff, and I realize that this is my fantasies, and the practice is here, and it's every day, so it's not in America. I mean, you know, that would be great, but it gets very real for me when I go, this is my life now.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like your practice is very much a part of your life where you are.
Yeah, and I have actually, well, one of the reasons I'm calling, well, the reason is this summer I've strayed, not strayed a bit from practice, but the strength of my practice has weakened somewhat, and
mm-hmm.
I'm just getting back into it now, and it's so important. It feels very joyful.
Yeah. Well, that's probably part of the emotion too. Do you get a sense of the contrast in that movement between, you know, life where practice is at the center of everything and life when practice is not at the center of everything?
Yeah, I do, and it's yes. And what actually has propelled me into practice becoming second in my life is that 4 months ago I got into a relationship with a man who I'm still with. And I've dated a lot of men the last 5 years here and there and you know, seen people for a while. And no one's been ever really into me, or I haven't been really into them, or it hurts, or it just doesn't feel right. And then last year I spent quite a lot of time on my own, and something kind of dropped in. It just felt, I just had the relationship with myself, and it just felt so good, and you know, all that wonderful stuff. And then actually there's always been still the wish, I'd like to meet someone and, you know, spend a long time with someone and la la la. And actually, so I met this amazing man who's really into me, and I've been really into, and it's taken up a lot of my life because he wants to spend a lot of time with me and all this stuff. I'm just not used to being with someone who is really there for me and really wants to spend time. But in doing that, I've kind of missed my relationship with myself.
Mm-hmm. So right now, the way that it's set up, it's an either or. So you're not caring for you as you care for him, or you're not loving you as you love him. It's kind of an either or. You either get to have your relationship with yourself that you want, or you get to have a relationship with this man who's in your life now.
Yeah, like he's wanted to spend a lot of time with me, and I'm so used to spending so much time on my own now that I've really come to love it, and I've just changed so much from when I used to do relationships. It's been like 5 or 6 years since I've had a serious one, and so I've kind of been a bit lost with how to nurture my practice and myself and be with someone who actually doesn't understand my needs to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just coming back to sort of actually stating what I need with him, like I need to go home and do my practice or spend some time writing or you know, just what nourishes me, and I've spent the whole morning practicing, and it's just been wonderful, and I'll see him this afternoon, but I do feel a bit guilty, but I'm trying to find that balance. Mm.
Right. Now, that last thing you threw in, that's interesting that you feel guilty, because that's very different from everything you said. Here, let me tell you what I hear you saying, and you tell me if this is so, that you took some time for you, and it sounds like quite a long period of time where you were by yourself quite a lot, and in that you really got connected with yourself and in the relationship with yourself that you've been looking for. Then,
yeah.
You know, what happens, of course, when we do that is we become really attractive. because we're meeting our own needs, and that's what everybody wants. So here comes this man. He wants to be a part of that, and you're not sure how to your commitment still is to taking care of you. You also are interested in exploring, it sounds like, this relationship with this man, and you're trying to figure out, trying to learn how to be with you in all the middle of all that. Yeah?
Yeah.
And then you feel guilty about that, which adds a whole nother level. That starts to add the conditioning in there, because up till that point, there really isn't. You don't really hear any. I just hear someone who's attempting to find out what life is all about now in this situation with the circumstances you have with this person in your life.
Yeah, and the conditioning that's thrown in there is the guilt because of my conditioning to be very obliging and serve a man, and also, you know, everything else that gets thrown in regarding my conditioning with men, you know, and so...
Yeah. That's what makes it worth doing, you know, to be in this relationship or any relationship with another person, relationship with work, because it gives you a chance to see that kind of thing. Because that's what's going to come up. You know, so if you have a conditioning to be obliging to people, you know, what that really means, I think we could say, is to abandon yourself in favor of this conditioned idea about the person you're supposed to be. Does that seem accurate?
Yeah, it does. And it's funny because the conditioning says stuff like, if you love someone, then you should want to do this for them or spend this much time with them. And actually, my experience, my being wants maybe something different from that idea, and then I think, oh, maybe I don't love this person because I need to do something other than what I think I should do if I love someone.
Right, and all that is happening up in conditioned mind, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what I hear you looking for is, what does your heart want in this?
Yeah,
I mean,
and I'm afraid,
clearly your heart wants that relationship with you that you know is possible because you've experienced it. And now you have the opportunity to find out, well, what is that? Well, you could say, what is that in a relationship? Or probably more what will happen is, what is not that? You know, what is all the conditioning that's going to come up against that in this relationship that's going to, you know, try to take that relationship with you away? And so you have, you know, it's like this man in a way, and that relationship you have with him is a mirror in which you get to see all that stuff.
Yeah, actually, yeah, it's sometimes ugly when I see it myself.
Uh-huh.
Like, oh wow, I'm also seeing how super critical I can be, and all that.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's also quite unpleasant. But I'm seeing it.
Yeah, and we have to see it, don't we? Because otherwise, you know, what we haven't seen just hides out in the background and controls us.
Yeah. It's like some things I didn't even know existed till now, and I'm quite shocked. There's this very scared, controlling, critical beast.
Mm-hmm.
Not beast, no. Like, there's someone judging all that as well. So
mm-hmm.
I've kind of identified all the sub-personalities involved that I'm aware of at the moment, but I think the main thing has been this kind of almost like a duality slide of but it's so great on my own, and then but this is what I've always wanted.
And
actually it's worth going through, but then I've lost myself.
The draw, you know, the draw is going to be to go up into conditioned mind and try to figure out this thing rather than just being, you know, with you in your heart. Let me ask you, are you doing the recording listening practice we were just talking about?
I've done no recording this summer.
You've done no recordings this summer?
No recordings, and my iPod broke, but I just didn't get another one.
Okay.
But I have been writing a lot, like I've been glued to my journal because that's how I've been able to process and mentor in that.
Yeah, just so you know, it's not the same thing.
Yeah,
no. So you really might consider starting that practice again, because I can just imagine how helpful that would be. If you're going along through this and recording the insights you're having, and then you're listening to that all the time, then you'll be getting constant information that you need as you go through the situation with this person and with other circumstances in your life too. Without that, it just kind of disappears and goes off, and for most of us, conditioned minds are just so powerful, we really can't trust ourselves alone with it, basically. And so here you are, you're all the way over there in Australia, needing that kind of support. You've got that support right there in the form of this practice of the recorder, if you're willing for it.
So what you're saying is the insights I do have when I record them, it just helps me not to forget.
Exactly, yeah.
Because I do have the insights.
Yeah, it does two things. It helps you to have insights because, as you're recording, you're going to be putting on your recorder what you're seeing about this situation and whatever else you want to talk about. So that helps. And then plus, every time you listen, you get a reminder, that's right. This is not about abandoning myself in order to please him. There's a whole other thing going on. So you keep getting that information over and over again.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks, Dave.
Good. Thanks for calling in. I'm glad you're kind of coming back around the corner towards practice. It's good to hear you.
Thank you so much. And I'll be sending Sangha vibes from Australia.
Okay. we'll look forward to that. I bet we'll feel them all the way over here.
Fantastic.
Okay,
take care. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Holly. You're listening to Open Air. Dave, I want to remind our callers to focus on one topic, and about 5 minutes would be great for our conversations.
Okay, yeah, yep. And I'll see if I can do my part too, Michael.
Okay, great. I know it's hard. I know it's a challenge. And we're going to hear from our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Okay, great.
Porchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Porchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Music by Trish Brooks for Culligan gives voice to what Simply Celebrate is all about. Opening to rivers of joy, listening to our hearts, trusting ourselves and our lives. Simply Celebrate is a book and business that grew out of gratitude for the work of Sherry Huber and this amazing Sangha. We use the practice as a foundation for helping people wake up to all the joy, spontaneity, color, and connection that is available in every moment. Please visit simplycelebrate.net.
What if you bathed in an ocean of roses? What if you swam in a river of joy?
Welcome back to Open Air. And we have another caller, Dave.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Dave and Michael. This is Chris.
Hey, Chris.
Hi.
Well, just let me throw this out there. It's been 3 years ago, almost to the month, I think, since I spoke to you, Dave, at least in this kind of guide position that you're in. So I thought that was
3 years.
Not that I'm keeping track. Yeah, 3 years ago.
Boy, time flies, doesn't it?
It does. Holy smokes.
What's going on?
Well, I've been debating all day which thing to talk about, but I'm just going to pick something that came up last week, which was on the radio show, I don't know, last week or the week before. Sherry was talking to somebody and mentioned this question that we've all heard at one time or another, what would you do if you had a year to live?
Mm-hmm.
And I had a really different reaction to that. You know, I hadn't thought about that in I don't know how long. But I had a different reaction, and I've noticed that in the past, I would say, the question would always be, what would you do? And it would always, my answer would be something like, you know, quit my job and travel the world, or you know, mm-hmm. something along those lines. But mm-hmm. it was always something that, and I never noticed it then, that it would be not so much unattainable at that time. It was more, it was always an experience or a thing to do. And what occurs to me now, if I had that choice, I mean, and it, how should I put this? If, you know, who knows if I'd be penniless or not, and maybe not have the means to do something like that. But instead, going this time around, if I had that, if I had a year to live, I think what occurred to me when I heard that was that I would just like to meet as many moments as possible in that last year with a smile on my face.
Mm. Yeah, that's so great. Yeah, it's the actual question is, it's not really what you want to do, it's what do you want to be.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's the question I would ask now. The question, the way it had always been phrased, at least I always heard, what would you do? It's always what would you do? You know, I could plan out some great, you know, European vacation or whatever, and I could be visiting this fabulous place and hating life because the guy in the taxi said blah 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 blah.
Yeah.
Kind of
well, if you did that, you would be doing what you were trained to do. It sounds like from the way you're describing it, which is basically to live life from egocentric karmic conditioning.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, and that's what ego loves, is to run around doing stuff and not being present.
Uh-huh.
But what you want instead is to be, I can't remember exactly how you said it, but it was something like, be present to every moment and greet every moment with a smile.
Yeah, or as many moments as I possibly can. And because
mm-hmm.
that way, it doesn't matter if I got, let's say I got this for the heck of it, diagnosed tomorrow and I've got a year, you know, maybe I'm not in a position in my life where some big trip or whatever is, you know, the thing that's right to do at that time. And so no matter what my circumstances, I can, if I'm penniless or not, or with a family or without, I can meet whatever comes up with a smile on my face and not just throwing one on there. I mean, be genuinely, you know, content in that moment and mm-hmm. meeting whatever comes up in that moment.
That's what you would want, yeah. And,
yeah.
Of course, that's perfect because that's what you're going to want when that moment of death actually comes.
Yeah.
It? You're going to want to greet that with a smile, too.
Yes. Yes.
You probably know this old story. It's really famous, and it's attributed to a whole bunch of different people, but the one I've heard attributed to most is this guy named Brother Lawrence, who was a Catholic monk, I don't maybe in like the 1200s, something like that, and somebody said to him, supposedly, you know, if you were going to die later on this afternoon, what would you do? And when they asked him that, he's sitting there weeding in the garden, and he said, well, I think I'd finish weeding the garden. And I think that's really what you're talking about. It doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter what you do at all, does it? It just matters who you are and how you are within yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only thing that actually brings happiness.
Yeah. Exactly, and it's a good, and it's I've been sort of recalling that in this last week or so since I heard it, or whenever I heard it on the archives, but yeah, and then it's a good reminder,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah, well, obviously.
I could have a day to live. I don't know I could have gotten run over on my bicycle on the way home today. I mean, you
mm-hmm.
don't know when that last year is or the last
mm-hmm.
second.
Yeah. So the obvious question is, you know, how can you do that now? I think
yeah, well, and how do I do it now? And I do have the opportunity to do it now, whereas, mm-hmm. you know, do I have the opportunity to do this other thing, this big trip around the world as an example? Well, maybe I'm not going to plan that right now, but I do have the opportunity right now to practice what it would to meet each moment that I can with a smile.
Yeah. Exactly. And then, of course, you know, whenever the day comes that you do get to go on this fantastic European vacation, which is, I hope you get to do at some point,
uh-huh.
what you'll want to take with you is the ability to be present and have a smile on your face.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing, of course, it's going to make it a real pleasure, and you'll be able to truly receive from that.
Yes.
I can remember Sherry saying a long time ago, I was just a brand new monk, and I didn't really get it when she said it, but I think I do now. But she was talking about how this is my version of it, but how sad she feels when she hears about something like somebody maybe has planned a really special dinner, for example, maybe like a dinner party, or maybe it's like a birthday or an anniversary or something really special like that, mm-hmm. and put a lot of time and attention and energy into it, and then ends up spending the, you know, the time where that, like say the dinner party is actually happening, in a conversation with ego about how it's not good enough and or whatever, I'm not having the feelings that I wanted to feel, or you know, and just basically being in conditioned mind and completely missing the event.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Oh, I think we all do. I mean, that's conditioned mind at its best. It's trying to do that to us all the time. And of course, what practice shows us is that we're always on this European vacation. You know, we're always at this special event that's been planned just for us. All of life is like that. And if we can be present to it in the way you're talking about it, then we can receive from it instead of being separate from it and just missing the whole thing.
Yes, yes. That's good stuff.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. So I hear you'll be practicing that.
I am. Yes, I'm practicing it right now.
Yeah, that's great. You know, one other fun thing about what you're saying is, you know, it's fun to think about having a smile on your face every moment. A lot of people would say that's not possible because,
uh-huh.
you know, there's stuff that happens that are not kind of things you smile at. But, you know, I was thinking as you're describing that, you know, to have a smile on your face when this thing that's really difficult and painful happens, not as a denial of it, but as, yes, this is a part of my life too. That, yes, I accept this as this moment, this right here that I want to be present to.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's a kind of an unconditional approach to life that I think most people think is impossible.
Uh-huh. Yeah, just this too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right up to the moment of death.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, if we're training for it, hopefully we can be there and say, this too, as we
uh-huh.
go.
Yeah. Fabulous.
Cool. That's neat.
Yes. Well, great talk to you, Dave.
Yeah, nice to hear your voice.
I'll see you in a few months.
Okay, take care.
Will
say hi to the family.
Will do, thanks. Good night. Good night, Michael.
Good night. Thanks for joining us, Chris. You're listening to Open Air. And we have another caller, Dave.
All righty.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, this is Pasha, if you can hear me.
Hey, Pasha, sure. I can hear you good.
Oh, hi, Dave. Hello, Michael.
Hi.
Hi. There was unexpected. enjoying listening to the show.
Yeah, it's like Zen roulette, isn't it? You just don't know when your number is going to come up.
Exactly. So I'm so glad to see you on the show today, and I have two things. One I'd like to share, and another one is I had a question that's bugging me since I've been on a retreat in a monastery. Certain things Sherry says, I can't understand right away, and
mm-hmm.
sometimes it takes me time, sometimes it's cooking in me, and sometimes it becomes a kind of conditioning game. Well, you're not smart enough, you can't never get it, and so on. So I've been practicing of being okay with not understanding and being okay with not knowing, and I've discovered so many things I don't know and might never know, and so on.
You know what's fun?
Yep.
Don't forget where you're going, Pasha. But what's fun about that is that's, of course, is exactly the way to go about not really knowing things, but seeing stuff.
Uh-huh.
Is that attitude of mind. Because, you know, the condition that comes in says you're not smart enough or whatever it's saying. You know, the whole point of that, I would project, is to keep you from ever seeing what it is, for example, that Sherry's talking about. But if you let that go and accept, okay, yeah, I don't know anything, I don't have to know anything, then there's this great big opening for life to drop the information in that you're looking for.
Yeah, and I recently had this experience. I asked her a question on during the book signing. She gave me an answer, and I'm puzzled there, and I'm like, should I ask again, or like maybe phrase it in a different way. But then a few days later, it's boom. Oh, okay. I mean, that's so simple. I mean,
yeah.
That's
great.
So,
you know, that's one of my very favorite things about practice and about a life that is around practice. And it's so zen, too. I just love that. You know, because the teacher says something, and of course the teacher is going to say something that you don't understand all the time, because that's what a teacher does and is someone who can see things that, you know, a lot of other people can't see. And then I just love that experience of you're just going along and the answer, you kind of got to put quotes around answer, but the answer doesn't come as a result of like a logical stream of thinking. And it doesn't come because like there's an intention to get something. You're just walking along. Maybe suddenly, you know, I think for me, a lot of times what happens is I suddenly get distracted from conditioned mind. Like there's, like I notice a flower or a cloud or the wind blows by or, you know, something like that happens. And for a second, the tension leaves conditioned mind and goes to this other place where life is, and then suddenly, like you say, boom, there's the information just drops in. That's just the best.
Yes, yes. But certain other things, it's still with me, and sometimes I'm kind of going into, I'm afraid to ask. Or conditioning says me. It's not yet a dialogue, but it's a feeling of fear of looking stupid or something. I'm not sure, but there is some kind of a block. So I'm just gonna practice right now and ask a question. I don't understand. Somebody on a retreat or during one of the sessions, it was around, the question was around being identified.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought somebody is giving an example from like a person is being able to see how they're identified. And there was somebody at monastery who used to raise a hand and say, "I'm identified right now." Well, and I'm puzzled with this because, I mean, it never happened to me. And how? I mean, if I see I'm identified right now, then wouldn't I mean, I'm always disidentified to see it. So, am I not understanding this disidentification? Or
let me see if I understand what you're saying. So the story that you told is there was a monk, actually this happens all the time, but there's this one particular person was kind of famous for saying, "Hey, you shouldn't trust me with anything important right now."
Because I'm identified.
Because I'm identified, right. And what I think what you're saying is, well, if that person could see and say that they're identified, they're technically not identified.
Yes, I mean, that was my experience.
Mm-hmm.
So am I missing something? Am I not have that ability yet of being seeing the identification before I disidentify? Or is it some kind of a joke that I didn't get or something?
Boy, it's hard to know whether or not to answer the question. So what have you, like, if you step out of whatever conversations you have about that, what do you see in terms of identification and not and disidentification?
Well, what I see when I'm identified, I'm just going along being identified, and I'm usually lost in whatever I'm doing, and as soon as I get a reminder about practice or about something. Or if I hit something really hard, it hurts me, and then I'm like, the hurt is usually, a pain is usually reminds me about practice.
Uh-huh.
So I'm like, breathe. And then I breathe, and then disidentify, and then I see, I just been in there. So that was my experience.
So when you're identified, you actually have no idea that you're identified. You're just being me.
Yes.
I mean, that's in quotes. You're just being whoever you think that you are. But then something wakes you up, like you have a little pain or something, and you, you know, in our language, you wake up and you see, oh, wait a second, I was just identified with this part of me who is not really me, and now I'm in a completely different place, and I can see that.
Yes, and I wish I had kind of a magic skill, you know, by somehow seeing when I'm identified. My question is, am I missing something, or is there a way to get there, or is it comes later, or what is it
what I would say is, I think the only thing you're missing is whatever conditioning is doing to you about this. That's definitely my experience, that if I'm identified, I'm clueless.
Yes.
When I disidentify, I can see, you know, I can see what was going on. Now, here's the tricky part, of course, is that I could disidentify with one part of me and just become another part of me. You know, the classic thing is that, you know, let's say I'm somebody who feels, I don't know what, like he's not good enough, for example, and feels, you know, like, well, it seems like there's a lot of evidence, a lot of things showing up that says I'm not good enough, supposedly. And then it all just seems just really completely real, and yes, it's true, I'm not good enough. So that would be, as you were describing it earlier, that would be what we call being identified. Now, I might disidentify and step back and realize, oh, wait a second, that's not true. I'm actually not getting any evidence that says I'm not good enough. That's all happening because of this perspective that I'm in. When I'm in that perspective that says I'm not good enough, everything that I see outside, around me reflects that and says, yes, it's true, you're not good enough. But from outside of it, I can see, no, that's not really true. And if we're really disidentified, then, of course, we're in the position to offer reassurance to that part of ourselves. We could say and say, no, it's not true. It's never been true that you're not good enough. Or the other thing we could do is we could step off and, like, we could be a judge. You know, we could disidentify from that part, and we could be a judge and say, yeah, it really is true that you're not good enough. See, here's what's going on. Here's all the proof of it.
Ah, okay. So I see. I guess I don't have that part that can see the disidentification from another part and claim, hey, I'm disidentified.
See, I think you can.
I can?
Mm-hmm. What it sounds like to me is the thing, you know, we're always trapped by the thing we can't see.
Mm-hmm.
What it sounds like to me is the little trap that's going on right now is what conditioning is telling you about what you understand or don't understand about being identified.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's I see it's I see it's kind of a baggage I'm kind of dragging along with me. It's just part of my toolbox of being okay with not knowing, and including not knowing exactly what means what that person mean when they raise their hand and say I'm identified right now. I'm okay with that. I just want to ask, and you know, I'm fine with my experience. You know, I don't need to really know what is it they had in their head when they had their experience.
Right. Yeah, that's great. And of course, that's what we were saying before. That's exactly the way to whatever information is there for you in that.
Yeah.
You know, no, I don't need to know. I'm just this is completely okay. Just staying open to whatever insights are there.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
I would project that what that person was saying, that monk that we were talking about, is not so much that I'm identified right now, because I think it's true what you're saying, that if I say I'm identified, then technically I'm not identified. I couldn't say that if I was identified. But he or she could be saying something like, you know, I notice there's a lot of identification floating around. Right this second, I seem to be kind of have my head above the water, but who knows 5 minutes from now. So watch out. Anything could happen.
I see. Yeah. That's my experience too. And it's even more. I feel like I'm under the water. I float up. I have a breath of fresh air, of disidentification, and I'm kind of sinking again into something else. And and then floating up again. But it's such a relief, you know, to have that breath of fresh air. And,
it sure is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, aren't we fortunate that we have that option,
mm-hmm.
that we know that that's possible and we can wait around for it? And with that attitude of mind that you're talking about, that, well, you know, I don't need to know. I don't need to figure this out. I don't need to understand this. I'm just going to be as present as I can to this and see what I can see, then all of that is good. It's good mm-hmm. when we pop up and get the fresh air. In a way, you could say it's good when we go under, because that's all a part of the process we go through in order to wake up and end suffering and see everything we need to see on the way.
Yeah, even underwater, I'm on the way to the next breath of fresh air.
Exactly, yeah, and I bet you what you're finding out is more and more when you go under, you're not really going under.
Well, yes.
It's kind of like the monk, the monk saying, I'm identified. I mean, you're going under, but are you really believing it? Well, I bet you, on a lot in a lot of situations, not really. I mean, you can see that it's there. You can see it's really got you. But you're also aware on some level, this is probably not real.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do I have a few seconds to ask another, share the experience, or are we out of time?
Well, we might want to go on, actually, to some more
okay.
folks. Would that be okay?
Great. Yes, great. Thank you so much. Okay. It was a pleasure to hear you on the radio. Thank you, Michael, for the great show, and I wish you continue with that. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling in.
Thank you, Pasha.
All right.
You're listening to Open Air. Today we have a special guest. Dave McKay is a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Dave, we're going to hear from Sangha Market and Stop, Drop, and Breathe, and then we'll be right back.
Okay, great.
What's this from Living Compassion?
If you've got a craving for fundraising and can't get enough of the good stuff, cruise and jet on the internet to www.sanghamarket.
That's sanghamarket.com for all of you squares out there.
Sangha Market, where you can sell, auction, buy, all to benefit Living Compassion. Check it out today.
If you suddenly find yourself believing the voices in your head, don't panic. Just remember these three easy steps. Stop, drop, and breathe. That sequence again is stop, drop, and breathe. This public service announcement is brought to you by VoiceBusters Incorporated, purveyors of the finest practice tools and reminders since 2008. Visit us on the World Wide Web at thevoicescartoons.org.
Stop, drop, and breathe. Stop, drop, and breathe.
Welcome back to Open Air. Dave, we have another caller.
Alrighty.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Dave. This is John Dugene.
Hey, John.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Hey, I want to share a quick experience with you.
Okay, super.
I was at the end of my rope a couple days ago.
Okay.
And it really hit me. This is kind of a three-part story. But I was realizing very profoundly in my life that a lot of what I do is kind of kicking the can down the road. A lot of the activities are just placeholders until I die.
Do you mean just kind of like killing time?
Like killing time in a small way, sleeping in a big way, mountain climbing. I mean, all of it's great, but ultimately, it's just kind of passing time until I die.
Wow, that seems like a very important insight.
It was a pretty important insight, yeah. And it's pretty deep, but But what happened was that in talking with a good friend of mine, he said, when you're present, because we talked about just writing, just walking, just you know, basically just being in the present moment. He said, he pointed out, he said, there's no ultimate end state. There's no dying when you're just reading. There's just no looming sense of end when I'm just here.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was insightful. And what I really want to convey is I feel like I get what Sherry's talking about when she talks about the fact that we're all living in a burning house or a burning home and we don't realize it. And, you know, we wake up and we're just kind of going along in the burning house and not realizing it.
Yeah, as if it's in some way we won't die.
Right.
Or that's kind of the same thing, as if it's not possible to really live.
Right. And for me, what I got out of that was, and again, in discussions with a Buddhist friend of mine, is I was thinking, oh, if I'm just here present, I don't have this feeling of I'm going to die. I'm kicking the can down the road until I die.
Mm-hmm.
And this insight dropped in and goes, oh, the house isn't burning.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just that there's no threat of death. There's no, oh, my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
In this place of being present, there's no burning. There's no house. It's just writing.
And of course the reason for that is that there is no I there when you're present die.
Right.
We might say you are life, and so there is no death.
Right. Right. There is no projection out to the future. There is no link back to the past scary event. It just goes. It just evaporates.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of these drop-ins that goes, oh, I get what this story is talking about in one more layer down.
And I'm projecting, really getting in that too, what your conditioned mind is up to as you go through your life and what it's trying to do to you and take away from you.
Well, of course. I got to go do this again and go into a movie. It's just kind of just, kill 3 hours, okay, yeah, great.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes away the joy instead of just being at the movie and being okay.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no looming death. There's just watching the movie. It kind of opened everything up.
Yeah, I bet. It sounds like it. Well, you know what? Another thing it seems like would come with something like that is there's no more fear.
Yeah. The threat of death is it truly evaporates in the present moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny. You know what I was seeing as you're saying that is, you know, we call this thing death, which we make up and we just make it up, which is like the opposite of life. Like there's life, and then there's this thing that's not life that we call death. But of course, that's not possible. The only thing that there is life. So we're like making up this thing that doesn't exist to be afraid of. But an experience like you're talking about, and these sort of insights you're describing for us, you know, really it points us to the place where we see that we are life. And so, you know, there couldn't possibly be anything to be afraid of. And this thing we call death is no different from what's happening all the time. You know, a better word for it might be change.
Sure.
You know, because that's one thing that's going on all the time is change. You could say, in a way, we're dying every moment because, you know, the me who I am in this moment is not going to carry through to the next moment. This experience I'm having will no longer exist. It's completely gone. And so, you know, that's happening constantly. But we're trying to hold on to some idea of me that could be alive or not alive, and then all of our suffering gets built up around that.
Yeah. Or, you know, there's death, but there's also living.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. I'd kind of rather be here and... It just opened it up as a place to live from that I can go back to.
Yeah.
Kind of cool.
Well, and really, it sounds like to give you a quite the right word or analogy, but like a means to really bring the life into your life that you're looking for.
Right.
Because that's clearly not what you want. You don't want a life where it sounds like it's okay. It's probably comfortable in a lot of ways. You know, you get to go to a movie if you want to or whatever, but it's not alive in the way that you're looking for.
Right.
You're just kind of killing time. You're just kind of, you know, putting in your time till it's all over.
But
seeing there's a way to be in and with your life right here, right now.
Right.
It's like it gives you a way to focus yourself that will, it sure sounds like, you know, bring that life that you're looking for to the surface where you can experience it.
Well, it just happens at that point. It's just kind of...
Mm-hmm.
It just, there is no stopping at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Is what it is.
Yeah. It's interesting to think about coming to life.
Yeah.
And that, because, you know, this goes back to the previous conversation, you know, when we're identified in conditioned mind, you know, you can't really say that we're alive. We're in this other place that's opposed to life, that's different from life, you know, that is out of touch with it and separate from it. You know, it's easy to describe that as being dead.
That's it. It was just to share that with you to reinforce it, actually. And, so that was very cool.
Yeah, it's one of those you want to get up all over the place, huh? You just put up big posters or put it, if you're doing the recording practice, get in your recorder, because that kind of thing can easily slide off the window, out the window. We forget it.
Yeah, tell my listening buddy 3 weeks in a row type stuff. Yeah, that's great.
Exactly, yeah.
All right. Thanks
cool.
so much.
Thanks for calling in.
All right. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now.
Thanks for joining us, John. You're listening to Open Air. Dave, we have a few minutes. I think we could fit in one more caller if you'd like to.
Yeah, let's try it.
Okay. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Dave. Hi, Michael. It's Todd.
Hey, Todd.
Hi.
Hey, Dave. I guess we just got a couple minutes.
Yeah.
Perfect.
It's a long time, though.
It is a long time. Right. Well, I phoned up with no agenda, so there you go.
Okay.
Because conditioning always has me in a huge daily rehearsal before the radio show. And today I just put that out of my mind every time I came in.
Thought you'd try something different.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just dropped that conversation and said, well, I don't have an agenda. I don't have a specific thing I'm going to talk about if I get on the air, and here I am.
Mm-hmm. And how's it going so far?
Yeah, it's going great.
Yeah.
I really appreciated the last conversation, though.
Uh-huh.
About, that's a conversation I've heard really repetitively about just killing time, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Just, the story is this just, you know, it's just, yeah, because it's the tediousness of conditioned mind that makes life tedious.
I know. It's amazing, isn't it, that we could get talked into a point of view like that. You know, you just look out the window, and it's just, how could we possibly get talked into an idea that, you know, we just have to kind of go through life, and there's not really anything kind of here for us. When you look out and you see the trees and the clouds and the ground and the leaves on the ground, and I mean, I'm looking out this window right now as I'm talking to you, and just the amount of, like, life and beauty that's just right here in this window is enough to spend a whole lifetime looking at, really.
Yes, yes. Like your caller said, being present.
Mm-hmm.
If you're presently looking at life as life is, it is so wondrous. It is. It's miraculous in its own nature.
Mm-hmm. And there's no end to the depth of it.
Yeah, that was the next thing I was thinking, yeah, to the experience that there's no end to the depth of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is kind of my experience with the recording and listening.
Oh, yeah?
There's no end to the depth of it, it seems, for me.
Mm-hmm.
The more I see, the more I record, the more I listen, the more I have insights about, it just seems to gain its own momentum.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's easy to imagine that that's because there's no end to the depth of you as a being.
Right.
Because that's what you're doing in that recording, listening. You're exploring this being, and you're, or even bigger than that, you're exploring what life is in this form. And that's my experience too. The more we look, kind of like Pasha was saying, actually, the more we look, the more we see how much there is yet to see. There's just
right.
no end to it.
Yeah. Yeah, and for that, I'm just so grateful.
Me too.
So grateful. I have so many moments where I'm not now just going, oh, just putting in time.
Mm-hmm.
Just putting in time,
mm-hmm.
which has been the story for most of my life until this practice. So.
Yeah, letting life teach you how to be alive.
Yes. Yeah, I love that. Letting life teach me how to be alive. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's great. And I just heard my watch hit 7. So I think we're at the top of the hour. I won't go over too long. And thank you and Michael. And hopefully we'll see you at the monastery really soon for a retreat.
That would be great. It would, yeah, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, I'm aspiring to make the May retreat, the Time to Feel Good follow-up retreat. Yeah.
Oh, good. Yeah, that would be great. It'd be fun to have you back.
Oh, good. Thank you, Dave. I appreciate that. And thanks again for being there for the radio show and being there to support Sangha. I really appreciate it.
You're quite welcome. Take care. Have a great evening.
Thank you, Dave. We'll talk soon. Thanks, Michael.
Okay.
Okay, good night.
Thanks for joining us, Todd. You've been listening to Open Air. Dave, it's been a great pleasure.
Likewise. That was fun.
Yeah, I've been practicing that smile on my face. Was that the first caller or one of the early callers?
Oh, have you? Oh, you know what? I just realized I forgot to tell you that Sherry said wanted people to know that she's traveling.
Uh-huh.
And that's why she couldn't make the show tonight, but she'll be back soon.
Wonderful. Thanks so much, Dave.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Take care, Michael.
Bye.
Bye-bye.